Welcome tonight to the Friday Night Fowdown. I am your guest host today. I am Kyle from Schemes and Stones fame. And today we have four total guests here. So if we want to give introductions, starting with Dave.
Hey, they keep inviting me back.
We did. And Sean?
Yes, I am back again, I guess.
And our newcomer, Brian.
How's it going? Good to be here.
All right. We have you here to answer some general questions. Some of these are kind of popular topics that we pulled off weird forums and podcasts and such, and others are just more thematical, fun ones that we're going to go over. So let's get underway. So we have an hour on the clock. I'm timing us now. All right, so starting with Dave on this first question, and I will warn people, there is spoilers on this one because this one is a fluff-based question. Let's tell us, Dave, who are the top five most powerful models in Malifaux based on lore and stories? Now, how you define powerful, I'll leave that up to you, and you can explain your reasoning.
And I am pretty bad at lore, but from what I can remember, Rasputina is quite powerful, as she completely told December to take a hike. Nicodem is quite powerful and in the game, best summoner in the game. Zoraida, who in the lore single-handedly brought the gremlins together. I had another one. Jacob Lynch, or I guess what's inside of Jacob Lynch. And I can't remember the one I was going to say for Ten Thunders. Whoever the tyrant is, tyrant guy.
Shenlong.
Shenlong, that's what it was, yeah.
Okay. Any particular explanation as to why they are the most powerful? Or
With Rasputina, because, you know, Arcanists are the one true faction. It's mostly her basically telling December to take a hike and find someone else. That takes quite a bit of power to overthrow one of the most powerful beings in the universe. Zoraida, she is old and crazy, and the lore I'm not super familiar with, but according to Breachside, all of the gremlins basically fear her, and they don't really fear much, so that lands up there pretty high. And I don't know much about Shenlong at all.
Okay. All right. So, moving from Dave, let's go to Sean.
Oh, that's a tough question. I could go two ways, but I guess I'll do a mix. I think I'm going to go with Lucius as one of the more powerfuls. I don't think he's the top, but just he's got his fingers in a lot of cookie jars. As far as like top power, I think it would probably be a close tie between either Sonya or Rasputina, just because they're both, they were living embodiments of tyrants. So if I had to put one on top of the other, I'd probably say, I'd have to agree that Rasputina's probably top, just because, like you said, she had the power to tell December, go scratch. But closely followed by Sonya. I think we're going to see some interesting things from Wong because of his three demons bag. They kind of hint that that is like a very powerful item and that he hasn't really explored that enough yet. So I'm kind of hoping that we'll have a dark horse in Wong. Let's see, that's four. Five, I'm going to throw Perdita into the mix, yeah. And I know Brian's probably going to get mad because I stole his.
But, a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, Perdita I definitely have to put in there.
All right, sounds good. Next up, I have mine. So I think you're all skipping arguably the most powerful one of all, and that's Titania, who everybody fears, and that's why all the tyrants are like, oh crap, she just woke up. And they all physically felt it, because when you... I looked over some of the vignettes a little bit earlier today, and it tells, like, they felt physical pain or physical fear, like, when she awoke. And they're like, oh boy, we don't want to have to deal her. And she was what actually led the charge in trapping the tyrants initially. And the Neverborn actually then trapped her, because she got a little bit out of hand. So, I think she's probably top dog right now. Although, I would say a lot of the other tyrants are following close behind. Rasputina said that she is actually fully working with December right now. And so I think she's at her peak of power. So I would say she's probably very easily one or two right now, because they're working in unison together. Whereas previously they always seemed to be at odds with each other. Then three, we have Hamlin, who has his... The plague is spreading very rapidly through the Malifaux city, basically. And they talked about how the rats are spreading and that his disease is growing. And like any disease, and since he is plague, his power grows with more people being infected. So I assume the tyrant gets more powerful when more people are diseased around him. And then I would say Hungering Darkness is actually, because Jacob's making a big power grab to buy up more... the local breweries and stuff like that, and he's trying to spread brilliance out more and more, and it says specifically that whenever things consume the brilliance liquid, it actually makes Hungering Darkness more powerful. And I think they're trying to power him up to make sure he can actually fight Titania if Titania goes after him, because they said specifically Titania wouldn't differentiate him between a tyrant, and because he's an older being that's like a tyrant, but he's not a tyrant. And then finally, I'm going to go with Nicodim, just because he did raise an entire army that went against and destroyed like half the city. He does definitely need some prep time for his to get powerful, but he has the most potential for amassing a giant army to charge in. So that's my top five. Let's go to Brian.
So, I'll be repeating with most what most people have said. Raspi, definitely, just because she has literally told December to, you know, hop off and just do what she says. Nicodim, again, he destroyed the city. Prep time, but he did it. And then Hamlin, just because plague is so powerful spreading. I think Perdita is going to become more powerful. I can't really explain why, but for some reason I think she has some connection with Nameless, the 13th tyrant that they don't name, so thus Nameless. And then lastly, I'm throwing my oddball out, Levy, mostly because he can command the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and literally bring himself back from the dead, which seems really, really powerful when he can literally choose if he dies or not. So I would go there.
Okay. All right, back to Dave. Is there any other comments you want to add?
No, not really. Those are some ones I didn't think of, but again, I'm not awesome on the lore.
All right. Sean, anything else to add?
Well, going back to Perdita, one of the things that we talked about before the show was, you know, if we're using 1.5 lore as canon still, which we should, then when she achieves her avatar hood, dumb, whatever you want to call it, she literally has knowledge of everything. She's like the most knowledgeable creature on the planet. So I think that adds a power level. You know, when you look at people's weaknesses and that kind of thing and are able to see those, plus just on a power level of gameplay, you know, she is one of the more powerful guild masters, I would say. I think she is definitely a dark horse that hopefully we'll see more out of.
Yeah. All right. I would say that I don't know if it's Nameless that she has ties to. I know there's a lot of theories that it's also the Witness, which is another tyrant that some people have speculated she has ties to. But It's very clear that she does have ties to something.
Right.
But yeah. As far as the other ones, I would say Sonya is actually pretty weak right now because Sheru, for whatever, however you want to say it, got ripped out of her. So I don't know if she's very powerful at all right now as far as other people's ideas. Shenlong also has a lot of... the dragon's been damaged and he's hiding inside of Shenlong because of Titania resurrection.
Right.
So right. I don't know. I just get the impression that Shenlong's not as strong as the other tyrants. Like, physically, he can beat them up, but, like, power level-wise, he's not there.
But, yeah, and I mean, a lot of it we'll have to see what happens with the governor and the Burning Man project and all of that, because that pretty much... I don't know if it was Titania that caused pain to all of the tyrants or whether it was the Burning Man. You know, he messed up a lot of the tyrants when he came into being, so.
Yeah. I think he messed up. It's actually, yeah, that's a good call. It feels like it's unclear, because I know sometimes it does reference specifically Titania, but then now that you say that, I think it does reference other times about it being the whatever they call the ascension of the Burning Man, although it was a failed ascension, but that's another story. Thank you, Lucas McCabe. But
yeah, I would
go ahead.
Brian. I would agree that the Burning Man, but also Lucius together, them as a combined entity, sort of working together, is going to cause a lot of power in the future. Also, mm-hmm. just Lucius' influence, not necessarily his power, but his influence in the city can get incredibly scary.
Mm-hmm.
So more kind of your underground back room implying things to happen makes him incredibly powerful.
Yeah, definitely. All right. I think that's a good amount of time on the first question. So let's move on to something that's more pertaining to the actual the game and competitive side of things. So starting off with you, Brian, if you could remove any of the current gaining ground schemes, this is 2017, which one would you get rid of and why?
I was thinking about this and I really didn't know. So I was going back to them and I think I would really have to go with Hunting Party because I think it's too easy. Most crews, you bring at least a couple minions that are generally your scheme runner that are much, you know, they're the ones doing all the work for you. So they dive way too deep if you're targeting. I'm a Von Shield player. I don't really have a problem doing Hunting Party. I have enough things that kill minions very easily. But the only thing that I bring this to is a Frightful Trapper. I hide him in the back and I'm just focus shoot you down. So you'll never have Hunting Party against me as long as I play semi. So Hunting is to tweak just a little bit to make it a less auto pick the crew. Because some crews, when you're playing against them, well, oh, you have all of these minions you're going to be throwing out against me. Okay, I'm going to take Hunting Party. I get 3 points. Easy peasy. No problem.
Okay, sounds good. Next up, we have me. Personally, I would remove Last Stand just because I think it's a scheme that is very hard to do, and it just feels like it's a dead pick in most games because it's so easy to deny it. Either they're doing really well and they're killing enough models where they can't score it because you just kill enough models off, or you just take out one or two of their models and then they can't score it. So I think it needs tweaked. I think it needs to be, I don't know if it just should be replaced or if it should be modified, but it's one that I wouldn't be, I don't think I would miss it if it got removed out of the next, for the next wave. So Sean, what are your thoughts?
Come back to me. I'm not a competitive player, so I'm having to look at these again real quick.
Yep, fair enough. Dave?
I would probably have to go with either, it doesn't matter to me, either of the ones that are end of game, the was it Hidden Trap and Search the Ruins. They're, after, say, turn three, if you haven't revealed that scheme, it's, in my experience, it's been very easy to have denied against me. So, waiting for the end of the turn, or end of the game, is kind of risky, because sometimes, especially in a tournament setting, you might not get that turn four or turn five to get those markers down to score on those. So they're just kind of picks that I don't see many people taking. So that kind of cuts down the options, especially if both of them show up in the pool.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brian, if you want to make any additional comments.
I was going to say, I really like Search the Ruins. I think it's a really good scheme in the sense that it forces you to plan out your late game. Like, you have to make sure you're putting yourself in a position where you need, you can drop all of those markers. So you have finished the job on a couple models or something like that, and you have to be killing your opponent. So you have to have all of these things going on while denying your opponent their own thing. So I think it's challenging to do, but it requires, kind of a little more effort on your part in your planning, which I like to see in the game of just, you kind of have to work for it. So you actually have to plan, think, plot out your next move.
Okay. And as far as thoughts on other people's ideas, I would say I actually kind of like it when they are together, when you have Search the Ruins and Hidden Trap, because I think that's one of the few times that actually they work. I do agree, though, Hidden Trap is very wonky. If there's no other schemes in the pool that are like it, there are no other scheme marker ones that are unrevealed, it's very obvious what you're trying to do, and it's very easy to stop it. But mm-hmm. when they're both in the pool, at least you can kind of bluff one or the other, so there's at least some play to it, but yeah. Alright, Sean, have you figured one out yet?
See, I don't know. I don't really have a problem with any of them. I've played all of these and they all seem to, but again, I'm not a competitive person, so I really can't talk from the aspect of a tournament. I know it sounds funny because I run Adepticon, but one of the reasons I run is because I'm not a tournament player, and I would rather run and have the people who are tournament players be able to play. Uh-huh. So yeah, I don't know. It's a tough call for me. I don't know that I would really get rid of any of them, because I'm looking through them now and they all seem to kind of fill gaps just to prevent it from being a kill fest or a scheme marker fest, So I don't know. If I had to pick one that I just don't personally like, and it's nothing about gameplay or anything, it's just dig their graves just because, it's one that I seem to pick specific masters if dig their graves is in there, because there are certain masters that's just an instant win, but
okay.
And I probably just haven't played the others enough to really have an adequate opinion on any of them.
Okay, sounds good. Any last thoughts, Dave?
I'm kind of surprised nobody said the status schemes with people with masters like Hamlin and models that can, prevent you from ever scoring them because they just can't take conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've heard on some podcasts where people are complaining about that, and it does make sense if that's in the pool, and if I can take models, can't take conditions like Lenny or Hamlin or Nyx, I'm definitely going to take them just to be able to deny if my opponent decides to take them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say, though, I think that's not a gaining grounds fix personally. I think that's you need to state that the condition giving from schemes is not a condition, called a status or something else. So it's like, oh, you're not immune to statuses. You can be accused now. But
I agree.
But
I agree too. I think you've got to fix the like nihilism itself, not the scheme itself.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. So let's move on to the next topic. And this is, which Malifaux model is your nemesis on the table? So my thoughts on this was the idea, it's that model that you see against you, and it just causes problems every time you play against it. So starting with Sean, who's your nemesis?
Scion of the Void.
And why is that?
I know it's not a terribly difficult model to wrap your head around. It's the complete antithesis of my playstyle. You know, I don't like things that, if I'm trying to kill it, go away without me killing it, and then being able to bury things. You know, I don't like being buried. So, yeah, he's one that I will always try to nuke pretty quickly. Just out of spite, but
okay, sounds good. Brian, who is your nemesis?
This is going to be really dumb and quite frankly embarrassing, but the Malifaux Raptor, because no matter how hard I try, it doesn't die. Someone dropped two of them on me during interference, because of course they do, and somehow they managed to have every 13 and a Red Joker in their deck that they just tossed out to defend it. And I'm on positive flips with Sue shooting at them. And I casually hit, you know, an 18, a 17, and, you know, all of these times I keep missing. And over the course of two games, and I have an ungodly amount of attacks on these Raptors, I have yet to kill one. And that's with a Von Scheel crew that is normally really good at killing things. And I can't do it. I hate them so much.
Okay. All right. Dave, who's your nemesis?
From the limited amount of games I've been able to play this year, I actually stitched together in the game that I played. It was the second time ever facing Kalani. And that model just blew through most of my heavy hitters without... Because for some reason, you know, he has to gamble to hit. Somehow he hit it every time and for severe damage, and a model of mine disappeared. So it's not the strongest model, but when it hits hard.
Mm-hmm.
True.
All right. And then last up, we have the Sabretooth Cerberus, which is my nemesis. And everybody says, oh, but they're so easy to kill. They're so easy to hit. They're just defense 5. That's all they are. I've Black Joker damaged these things so many times, and I've never am able to get them to even half wound, so they stop getting pluses on everything. And then whenever they attack, my opponent always hits like 3 or 4 books, high books, in those attacks. So he gets to just chain attack, chain attack, chain attack, chain attack, chain attack. And, like, he just rips through models. I'm just like, this is ridiculous. And it feels like every time I see those stupid things, particularly in Marcus, who gives them more attacks, that I just have so many issues with them. I've had only a couple games where I feel like they didn't rip through my entire crew, and they just maybe whiffed an attack on something. But, yeah. So, any additional thoughts going back to Sean?
Well, it just seems like we all took models that we seem to flip poorly against. So.
Exactly.
It's not so much that they're effective, it's just that we're really ineffective at taking them out, so yay.
Fair enough. I will say, though, to Brian's comment, I think, was it Raiders, Raptors that you were playing against?
No, the main time it was Doug. Doug did it, but Raider also has really gotten me with his Raptors.
Yeah. Something about Raider, and whenever I try to... I have the same experience when attacking his Raptors. He always seems to hit 13s on those things. I'm just like, ugh.
It's gross.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the next one. This is a more lore-based thing, and I'll be starting us off. So this question is, which Malifaux characters would you like to see meet each other in a story, and what would that entail? Like, what would happen in that story? So, I'm going to start off with I just want to see, this is the Fight Night kind of theme. I want to see the big Royal Rumble. I want to see Raspi versus Titania duking it out. Like, I just want to see them no holds bar going at it and see who could... They'll probably not... Neither side will maybe win. Maybe they'll both go back to their corners at the end of the fight and kind of regather their strength. But I want to read that story. So next up, Brian, what do you want to read?
So I'm an Outcast player. I love Von Scheele. He's the master I learned to play on. So I want to see Von Scheele in a bar, sitting down and just getting roaring drunk with the Vic sisters. I think it would be hilarious. You know, you have these two very respected, like merc leaders, their reputation is everything, and they're just sitting down getting hammered together, talking about like the biggest and best job they did, and they're trading stories back and forth about, you know, oh, I did this and I got paid this, and I went back and forth and I fought these people, and just like trying to one up each other, but still like there's a that mutual respect. I think that would just be hilarious to hear and read about them just getting hammered and talking about their careers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be pretty fun. Dave?
Again, keeping with the theme of throwing down. And again, this may have happened in the lore, since I'm bad at reading the lore. But I want that final throwdown with C. Hoffman and Ramos. And then have C. Hoffman change sides so I can have a Guild Arcanist crossover box.
Interesting. I don't know if we'll ever see that, but I could see maybe them doing a weird Nightmare Edition and maybe have them kind of themed in that manner. I don't know. But anyways, all right. Last up, Sean.
I'm a Gremlin player, so I'm going to speak up for poor Ulix, who never gets any story time. And I think he and Marcus should get together and do some husbandry interesting stuff and see what they could come up with.
Hmm. I feel like that would spawn something like the sow, some giant freak monster pig.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely. It is Malifaux. So, yeah. That would happen.
Exactly. First 120 mil Malifaux model.
It's a pig.
And this is all assuming that the Burning Man is going to become a the other side character, and they're going to shy away from that in Malifaux storylines. Otherwise, anything with the Burning Man.
Yeah, yeah. I assume that will be Burning Man. That will be other side lore. That'd be my guess, at least. So
yeah, that's
go ahead.
I said that's safe.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else people would like to see? I guess starting back around for me, another interesting story I would like to read is just seeing Zoraida and Lucius talking. Like, and that interaction, I feel like there'd be so much information. It almost, although it'd be very cryptic because both of the characters are very cryptic people, it'd be very interesting to see how they would interact with each other. One being a spy master, one just being able to see fate. And yeah, I'm very curious to see what would come of that. Brian, any other thoughts or comments on other people's stuff?
I like the throwdown brawl idea between Hoffman and Ramos. Because Hoffman I like him as a character. I've never seen him play on the board, but his fluff I really like. I like the character they've crafted, and Ramos I just really dislike. So I would love to see, as a character, I've never seen him play it again, but I would love to see Hoffman just like throw him through a building, or more accurately, like, command one of Ramos's constructs to pick him up and throw him through a building, because, you know, Hoffman is basically this telekinetic machinist who's amazing. So I would love to see Ramos just go flying like through a building or something. I think that would be fun.
They almost did throw down, but they haven't actually thrown down as far as right. Actual lore.
Right.
And I think they're kind of... I think they're kind of cool with each other at this point in the lore. That's at least the vibe I got from my understanding. Is there, like... Hoffman doesn't want to have anything to do with Ramos, but at the same time he's like, I'll let it be and walk away kind of thing. At least that was what I recall.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
All right. Any other thoughts? Anybody can just kind of jump in or...
Maybe just for fun, like a Mayfang and Spark story. Just them hanging out with the mechanical...
the pork big, chop?
Yeah, mechanical pork chop. Getting ready to go to help out Mayfang going into what she needs to do.
Exactly. Or why they even work together, how she met Sparks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely, there are some interesting combinations of models, and you're like, how would these people even know each other? But, yeah, alright, cool. So, are we ready for our next one?
Sure, I'm good.
Alright, this one, I feel like this one will probably get a little more talk time on. So, annoying habits that your opponent has. So, what do you find to be the most annoying out of all those habits? And we can talk about various ones. So, again, I'm starting off on this one. I think, personally, one of the annoying habits that I see is when people mismeasure. And this is usually more inexperienced players or people that haven't played as much. They'll measure from, like, back to front of the base or do things like that, and I'm like, no, that doesn't actually go that far. It has to be from here to here. You got to measure from the same point, just because that can cause some really skewy things, especially when you, me being a competitive player, I measure your stuff to see, make sure I place my stuff far enough away. It's like, okay, you'll have to walk to charge me or do whatever. So if you, like, mismeasure it and you're just like, you couldn't actually get there, I measured that. That's kind of annoying to me. I don't think it's so much an issue, though, because, like I said, it's usually newer players, and usually, if I'm playing against a newer player, it's not like I'm being super competitive anyway, so I'm just being friendly and just trying to get them encouraged into the game. But, Dave, what's something that just annoys you?
I'm trying to think. Nothing really super jumps out at me, because I tend to play pretty casual. It's a good thing and a bad thing, but sometimes just explaining everything your model can possibly do to your opponent before you do it. I don't really need a rundown of your entire card every time. It's appreciated that you're giving me the information, but sometimes you just need to get a move on with some of the games.
Okay, makes sense. All right, Brian?
I was thinking about this, and I kind of have two. One, when in casual games, people measure, like, I make a measurement for a charge or an attack or something, and then they measure it, and like, oh, this is wrong. I'm like, no, I got my 9 inches or whatever it is. I'm like, no, it's wrong. And they challenge it, and then I measure it, and it's right. And I look in their measuring tape. They have it set up so, like, the 9 inches is covered up by the physical, like, their thumb or something. So they're just, like, misreading their measurement. And it's happened a couple times, not, like, consistently, but in casual games where, like, they measure and challenge every little thing I do. It's like, oh, is that actually 4 inches? I think you actually went, like, just slightly off of it. And when you're, like, in a tournament, I get it, but in just, like, a casual, general play, like, yeah, if it was, like, super obvious, call me out on it. But most, like, I'm right. I measure it myself. And then the other one is, I've had this happen where people flip-flop pushes in places. So at a game where I'm playing and the guy tries to, that gets a trigger to push Von Scheele away. So he picks him up and places him behind a wall. I'm like, no, you can't. Like, a push and a place are two very different actions. One is you sliding it 3 inches until it stops. One is you can physically pick it up and place it somewhere. Uh-huh. And he kept doing this for like 3 or 4 games of confusing the place and the push mechanics. And it's just getting really frustrating because, like, one is, in my opinion, objectively better. A place is better than a push because mm-hmm. it ignores terrain. And you keep doing it over and over and over again, which just bugs me to no end.
All right. Sean, anything that you have?
Well, mine is more a gaming thing in general, but people who bring their personal life into the game. So it's like they come in surly and pissy and they carry that into the game and then they, you know, bitch and moan through the whole game. And it's like, okay, dude, I came here to have fun. You know, I kind of agreed to leave all my nonsense behind. You know, that's why I game, is so that I can forget all my nonsense. And I definitely don't want to take your nonsense on. So, you know, leave that behind when you're coming down to the table. Smile, enjoy it. If you can't enjoy it, then, you know, stay home. But that's my big pet peeve. And I know Doug wanted us to mention his.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember what he wanted?
Yes, I remember what it was.
Okay, I'll let you tell Doug's then.
All right. Well, we have pseudo, I guess, invisible ghostly Doug talking to me, and he is telling me that his biggest annoyance, and there's one particular player in our meta that does this, is whenever he's on a plus flip, he draws both the cards into his hand, and he'll look at them. He'll put the one that he wants on top, and then he'll put it down, and he's like, all right, I hit you with this. And Doug was saying he hates it because it's like, well, I want to see what you flipped, because what, I don't know, maybe you flipped the Black Joker, and I didn't see that, and then you just put the other card on top of it. Now, we know the player that does it doesn't do that. He doesn't cheat it, but it just annoys Doug to no end that he draws it, looks at it, puts the one on top, and then puts it down, as opposed to just flipping it face up. Which, I kind of get that. I play against him a lot, the person that does it, and I understand it. It doesn't bother me as much, but I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, I get that one too. You know, not so much for the quote cheating aspect, but just because this is a game of numbers and a game of suits. So knowing which suits and which numbers have been flipped does kind of manipulate your decisions later on, mm-hmm. as both the player who's flipping the card and the player who the card's being flipped against. You know, so that's open knowledge, you know, at the time it's being flipped, and that's really the only time it's open knowledge. So, you know, I think that it's something that should definitely be adhered to.
Yeah, definitely. And back around to me, there is one I did think of that I didn't really think about earlier, but now that we've all talked, there is one habit, and this probably annoys me more than anything else in the game. And this is more, I understand for tournament play, I have a different kind of etiquette for that versus like a casual game. People that try to be very competitive in a casual game to the sense where they don't, like, things get unfriendly. And this kind of goes back to the whole Sean talking about people being salty to some extent. But it's that where, like, if you mess something up and you're like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. Can I do this instead? And, like, assuming no cards are flipping, I'm just, like, there have been things where no cards were flipped or anything like that, and it's like, oh, I didn't realize that one thing. Can I just do this instead? And they're just like, nope. Just chalk it up. Don't do it next time. Whatever. But you can't take it back. I'm like, in a tournament play, I completely understand. It's tournament. I'll usually ask my opponent, is it okay? And if he says no, I'm like, all right, I get it. That's cool. But if it's a casual game, I just kind of look at him, I'm like, really? You're going to be that? Okay. And then that's when my casual mode goes into competitive mode. I'm like, all right, you want to play that game? We'll play that game. I can be pretty mean, and I can be pretty gotcha if I need to be. That's one thing about this game I know a lot when it comes to like just interactions and stuff. But anyways, moving back to Dave.
Had something, but I forgot what it was. Oh, during a tournament, I know being, I guess, overly chatty to the point of neither of us being able to take our turn because of being too chatty. It's a weird form of slow play, I think. But I haven't seen it in a while, so.
Yeah, I would say that's more of a tournament thing. If it's casual, like half the time playing Malifaux is catching up with certain friends because I only play against them.
But when you have a time limit, you kind of got to move.
Yeah. What were you saying, Sean?
I would say even in a casual, you know, it's like if you're talking to the person at the table, that's fine. My thing is when, like, everybody that the guy knows stops by the gate. Oh, hey, how's it going? What are you playing here? Oh, Malifaux, what's that about? It's like, okay, dude, we don't have time to do a demo, you know, just in the middle of a game, you know, let us finish this game. Then if you want to do a demo, pull your friend aside or pull me aside. I don't care, but let me finish the game first. And
then we'll take you
through everything.
Yeah. Or at the very least, it's like you can talk while I'm doing something and then like play and then you can go back and talk. Like if you do something like that, if there's a time limit. Yeah. I don't know anybody that likes to talk a lot while playing, Brian. I'm saying for you to go. That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure. Because the two of us never talk ever when we play. Ever. It's always strictly game-based.
We just stare.
Duck glares at each other. No, I can't think of anything more. I thought I had one, but I think I agree with basically everything that's been said. So, I'm good.
All right. Anything else that comes to mind, Sean, or are we all good?
It's a personal thing for me, and don't even blame the people for doing it, but table clutter for me is a big issue. And you know, I try not to call people on it, but it's like, I really don't even know what the answer is. There are people who just don't like to use their cards to write things on. So they'll like have 15 dice around Shenlong. And it's like, okay, what the fuck does that one represent? What the fuck does that one represent? You don't even know what any of your dice mean anymore. It's like, it's just clutter. It's not even marking anything at that point. So, and you know, people, I've played Hamlin and I understand that there's a lot of rat cards and all that, but they don't want to confuse the rats. It's like, I have numbers on my bases and I have numbers on my cards, you know, it's things you can find works around for. You don't need 15,000 dice on the table and little widget wizard markers on every damn figure that's out there. It's like, because, you know, if they forget to move something or if they knock the dice over, you know, it's like, oh, what was that on? It's like, well, it was on full wounds. That's why that model's off the table now. But, you know, so it's so not conducive to gameplay. It's like, if you can't write on your card, you know, figure something out where you aren't going to accidentally knock the dice over or forget to move the widget with your fig or whatever.
Yeah, I completely agree. If it's cumbersome and it's just like, why are you doing something that you're making this 10 times harder than it should be?
Yeah.
Just write it on the card. You're fine. I mean, but...
Yeah, and again, I try not to make a big deal about it, but it is one of those things that really kind of rankles my hackles every time. You know, it's like, oh God, here we are doing this again. But I don't ever really bring it up in the game. I'm just like, okay, whatever you got to do, just don't be trying to cheat me. I'm a bad enough player where you don't need to cheat. You know, just play the game.
All right, fair enough. All right. Any closing thoughts before we move on to the next topic, or are we all good?
I am definitely good.
I'm good.
Play.
All right. So next up, this is something that just came down the pipeline. I believe it was just this week. So what are everybody's thoughts on the new miniature boxes that Weird is officially supporting on Kickstarter? It's not being produced by Weird, but they're officially like sponsoring them, I believe is what it is. And they're an independent company that's making them. So starting off with Brian, I know are you familiar with these? I know you weren't quite sure about them earlier.
Like the custom boxes that, you know, you can get engraved and stuff.
Yeah.
Like those. Yeah. I was looking at the Kickstarter yesterday, and I think they are absolutely beautiful, and I wish I had the obscene amount of money to get one, but at the price, like, you start actually getting the box or whatever, it just doesn't, I can't do that right now. I don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for people who have very large number of models, like a Rezzer, like, it's not practical. Like, it's good to, like, look pretty with, but it's not practical to actually bring to, like, a game or even, like, a tournament with your models. For me, I have, you know, two Masters. I'm a pretty new player. I've been playing 6 months, something like that. I don't have any models. It would work for me. I could fit basically my entire crew and then some add-ons in one of those. For someone like you, Kyle, where you own, you know, three entire factions or whatever.
I wish that was it. That...
Yeah, right. It's just not that practical. Though they look beautiful, and I wish, you know, someone with money, Kyle, would want to give me one for my birthday.
I mean, we're good friends and all, but I don't know if we're that good of friends yet. You're going to have to work on it.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll accept that.
All right. Sean, what are your thoughts on them?
I love Dogbite. I have a number of their products. I can't say enough good about them. But I'm with Brian. They're a little too small for my needs. I'm a chronic collector as well as the store henchman, so I tend to bring everything with me when I come to the store. So, yeah, purposes, it's too small, which is really unfortunate. I think they're gorgeous, and I would love to own one, and I may pick one up just to have for, you know, like quick jaunts or whatever, where I'm not doing my henchman thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm glad they went to the 4-inch height as an option, because that makes it a little more feasible. But yeah, no, I think they're great, and I think for a lot of people it'll work. Tournament players, I don't know, it seems a little small. But
all right, Dave, your thoughts?
That Neverborn box is gorgeous in the pictures they've posted. I'm kind of in the same boat with everyone else so far. Beautiful, beautiful boxes, but if you are taking more than maybe 7 models, you're not really going to be able to fit them in there very well.
Well, supposedly they can hold 25.
It looks like it in the box.
I think those are 30 millimeters that they're talking about there. But let's see. The standard is 11.25 by 5.75 and 4.25. So yeah, you could fit a few in there.
You could do it. I could see like 10 maybe, but then
maybe
they got to be 30, like got to be 30 mils.
It's got to be 30 mils that don't overlap the base either.
Right.
Well, and you're also talking about which layout are you choosing? Because there are a number of layouts there. If you were to do the one with the single long rack for your decks, you might be able to do. Let's see, how many they got in there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11. They have 11 figs in there, one of which is a 50, four of which are 40s, and they're all spaced, you know. They aren't really squished in there like I would do. So, I don't think you're going to get a full, what do they claim?
25,
unless they were 30s and you were really squishing them in there. But You can get a fair number in there. It's a pretty decent sized box. It's just for people like me, you know, the whole faction has to be there. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my own thoughts on are echoing basically everybody else. There is one other issue. One of our other friends does a similar kind of magnetizing. And something I noticed with his having to, like, just pick up his models out of it, like, if the magnet, depending on how strong those magnets are, like, you have to be really careful when you, in something like that, is you have to pick it straight up. And if you pick it straight up, I have seen people yank the model off the base and the base stays magnetized. So, and it is Malifaux. There are models that have, like, a tip, and that's all that's touching the base. So, that could be an issue. I don't know if they provide the magnets with it or anything like that, but that would be a concern of mine, because I have seen that happen.
Well, the felt will help a little bit with that. Because it'll put a little layer in there, and it's a slidey layer, so you can wiggle them around a little bit. Also, I don't suggest picking the model straight up and picking it up by the model. I suggest pivoting and then pull up. Because I magnetize my bases and I use a cake tray to carry them around. So I've learned over the years that picking them straight up, yeah, you'll lose some bases that way.
Mm-hmm. It's just, like, depending, and the way he has his base layout is, like, sometimes it's hard to, like, get it any other way, because especially if there are a bunch of models crammed in against each other, it's like,
sure,
I don't feel comfortable picking this model up, because I'm going to rip this off. But, any additional thoughts? That's... Go ahead.
I was going to say that's definitely a possibility.
Mm-hmm. I'll just echo what been said again, that, like, they look beautiful, like that Neverborn, just gorgeous, and, like, if you have the money, go for it, if for no other reason to put up on your collection and be like, this looks really cool, and, you know, maybe when you're at home storing your most favorite models in it, not necessarily like travel, but as like up on your bookshelf, because they look beautiful, but as, like, an accessory to, like, oh, it looks good. I don't know if the money is worth it. I wish I could, but then broke.
That gives me a good idea. Something that would be really cool to do. Now, this is out of my skill set, but for some of the people that are very skilled painters, turn it into a display box where it literally, because it looks, it's a gorgeous mm-hmm. box. Then you open it up and then you literally have, like, one of those, you have a built-in tray that you put insert in there with, like, kind of tranny effects. Yeah. And then you have the models in there as well, and have, like, almost literally like a display case for, like, a painting mm-hmm. contest or something like that. I think that would be really amazing.
That would be great.
But again, I'm not that good of a painter, so I would never be able to do something to that
effect. Yeah. Hard is hard.
Well, the other thing that this would work really well for those of us who are Through the Breach players or GMs, this would be perfect for Through the Breach, because you would never need that many models.
Oh, yeah.
And it holds a couple of decks. So, yeah, I just picked up on that. So, yeah, now I know what I'm getting. Okay. Damn it.
Sold.
All right. Well, you got one of us at least. All right, moving on to the next question. This was kind of ties into what Sean was talking about earlier, but this is how you avoid getting tilted while playing, and how do you deal with an opponent that is getting very salty about the game? And we have about 10 minutes left, so let's keep that in mind as we're answering this. So I'll start us off. Personally, I will fully admit I am somebody that does get tilted. And I'm sure Brian can attest to this, having played against him several times. I try to keep it manageable, and I try to not direct it at my opponent. I try to be very clear. It's like, I'm not mad at you. I'm just really annoyed that my cards are going very one-sided, or your cards are very hot, because I feel like I personally, and maybe this is a perception thing, maybe Brian can speak to this, I feel like my opponent's decks get really hot more often than normal when they play me, and they see a lot of really good flips. I fully agree that's not an excuse for losing, but it does kind of tilt you when things like that keep happening. You're just like, okay, all right, I guess I'll just have to work around that now that I don't have that model. Okay. So personally, I apologize to anybody I ever play if I get tilted and get a little salty. To avoid it, though, I think the best thing is to just sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the moment and just look at the big picture and just really think about, does it really matter if that model's dead now? I think I can, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just think about it and you're like, actually, that doesn't really matter that much. I can still get all my points. And also just remember, it is a game at the end of the day. It's not like somebody died because in real life because of this or like anything like that. So I think that's just one of those, maybe you need to walk away from the table if you're getting really bad and just walk away for a minute, cool off. I don't know if that's practical, at least not in a tournament, that's not. But if it's like a casual game, maybe that's something you should do for the sake of your friendship if you're playing a friend or something like that. As far as dealing with them, I try to talk to them because generally people, first off, usually tilted people like to talk. They want to complain about it. Sometimes that helps them get it out. Granted, I've done some counseling. I have a little bit of history with counseling as far as like classes I've taken and stuff in school and whatnot. So I have a little knowledge when it comes to letting people talk it out. I know a lot of listeners probably won't have the patience for that or anything like that. But I would say try to talk to them a little bit and at least let them know that it's like, hey, come on, this is just a game. Let's cool it off. And I mean, if it's getting really bad, if it's a tournament, you call TO. If it's not a tournament, you may just, if it's bad, maybe you just walk away and say, okay, it's like, I'm sorry. This is not fun for me. And just don't play that person if they're going to keep being that way. I know, Dave, this was your question when you submitted it. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that came out of the last tournament I was at where the second and third rounds went very much not in a good direction for me, and I just got saltier and saltier.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Yeah, Trapper Steve, my favorite. Steve. Yeah, right. That Trapper pretty much softened up all of my iron sides for the most epic rip the shirt off thing I've ever seen. It was gross.
So Ironsides likes a shirtless Von Shield is what you're saying.
No.
Very much so. No, it was glorious. It was glorious. You know it. You know it in your heart, Dave.
Yeah, so I got a little tilted about that, and then the next player I played, who just came back from Adepticon, and he's a really good Gremlins player, and I saw what he put on the board, and I just didn't have an answer for it. So I just took Claim Jump and Last Stand. Because I was against a Ulix player, and I brought May Fang. I'm like, well, at least I'll get those 3 points. And just hung on for dear life for my last two enforcers at the end of turn four to get my last standpoint and then called the game because I was done for the day.
Fair enough. But
yeah, I've seen it on both sides where I've made people salty and I have been salty. It's just, I try not to get that way, but yeah, when it was beat down after beat down, it's hard not to get upset. But playing against somebody, yeah, like talking with them, maybe even offering some insight on how to defend against what I'm doing. Sometimes just to kind of soften the blow a little bit, in like a casual game. I've done that before. Because they might just not be familiar with the models I'm using.
Uh-huh.
Just to kind of keep them in the game for a bit longer, at least.
Yeah.
That seemed to work for me.
All right, Sean, any thoughts on this one?
Well, like I've said a couple of times this show, I'm not a competitive player. And a lot of the reason why I'm not a competitive player is because I can't really game for that long and still remain social. So I learned that playing in team tournaments with a friend of mine who's a really good friend and a really what's the word? I'm like, really good sport, really fun guy to be with. And we would do these team tournaments in Warhammer Fantasy and we'd have a good time. But invariably by game three, I was just like, you know, fuck all you, fuck your mothers, and I'm going home. So, you know, it didn't matter how well we had done or how poorly we had done. And I realized that, you know, I have my breaking point when it comes to miniature games as to how many games I can play before I get to that point. So, I don't do competitive anymore. And, if I do competitives, it's silly things like story encounters or, you know, henchman hardcore or enforcer brawls. You know, I never do anything like masters or team tournaments like that. Cause I don't want to be the guy that brings people down. You know, that's not fun. That's not fun for anybody. And when I sense myself getting to that point, I tell the person, you know what? I'm sorry. I hate to waste your time, but I'm not going to be fun in this game. And it has nothing to do with you. It's me, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a relationship that shouldn't have started, and you know, so I'm just going to end it now. But as far as other people getting salty, when I'm playing games, I'm telling a story in my head. You know, I'm always seeing a little movie vignette going on of what's going on the table, and so I try to share that with the opponent. You know, we laugh about things. We have a good time. And if we don't, and I pick up on that pretty early, I say, you know, hey, you okay? You know, is this a good time for the game? Cause if it's not, you know, cool, man, you know, go home, take care of what you got to take care of. If there's other stuff on your mind, you know, take care of that. Don't kill your game time. Don't waste your time trying to do something that isn't conducive to solving whatever's breaking into your game. So. Yeah. Do what you got to do.
All right. Sounds good. Brian, what are your thoughts?
For me, and this is weird, but I get less salty the more competitive I play. And I don't know why, but when I'm approaching the game very seriously, it's much easier for me to kind of like, oh, bad things happen. Okay, move on. Next flip. Let's go. It's in casual play where, like, I'm much more focused on having fun and just, you know, messing around with, you know, my friends or whatever, just, like, trying something. That's when I get salty. And then I try to get, like, a little more competitive and focus on it more objectively and take myself out of that but still have fun. It's weird, but focus on it as, like, it, you know, it happens. At least it's not happening in something that matters. Like, I'd rather be unlucky in this than in something else. As far as with other people, a lot like Dave was saying, just kind of like talking them through it. Like if something went really well for me, kind of explain how I set it up or what they missed, or if it's something on the card, like kind of remind them. Like one that I encounter is with FryCorp, we ignore blast and people frequently forget about that. So they get mad about it. I'm like, I ignore blast. Like, you cheating all of these cards isn't going to help you. I want you to know that. You don't waste your time and your resources. So just kind of sharing that information with them once you see their tipping point is approaching, and kind of just putting the fun back.
All right, sounds good. And that basically hits our time limit for today. So thank you very much for being here today, everybody.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. And we will hopefully catch you next week or whenever recording resumes. I know Doug is currently, he just bought a house and he's traveling right now, so he may be a little preoccupied for a while. Not sure about that one, but we'll hopefully get back soon.